We are gathered here to discuss an article. Oh, let me just turn the sound down here. An article called Marshall McLuhan and James Joyce, Beyond Media, by Donald Thiel and his bride, Joan Thiel, first written in the December issue of 1989 in the Canadian Journal of Communication. And Katie here studied it, recommended it. And so what do we say first about it, Katie?
Well, it's sure kind of a harsh. It's highly critical.
Yes.
Because it's not that he faked.
So, what's he critical of? What's the main point? What's Thiel critical of McLuhan about? Are you thinking? Oh, what'd you do? Fall off? Let's go up here. Looks like she fell off. Who would be qualified to, let's see, who's here? Until she comes back, let's see. She's back. Okay. So, what is Thiel critical of McLuhan regarding Joyce? Yeah, she's on. She's speaking.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So anyway, I had to call back. It says that Marshall failed to successfully communicate the insights of contemporary poetry and art communications researchers. So it's basically saying that he missed what Joyce was saying, or he failed to communicate that to people.
Okay.
I think largely because he didn't understand it, but go ahead.
Say that again. Who didn't understand it?
Well, I don't think, just because it failed to be communicated to me doesn't mean that it was necessarily Marshall's fault. Like, maybe people just didn't get it.
Okay. I've got a way out of that. If you take Marshall as the author of Understanding Media in these books, then yes, he failed to do what the high standards that Don Thiel says that one must bring to understanding Finnegan's Wake and applying it to the day. So most of the arts and sciences mirrored Finnegan's Wake after World War II. And Marshall knew that, but Marshall expressed it differently. And this is something maybe Don didn't know, that the books that Marshall wrote, especially the Gutenberg Galaxy Understanding Media, are not Marshall's point of view, are not his expression. They are the opinion of the archetype of the printed press, or the archetype of book meme. The book itself is speaking and criticizing the solar theater and harks back to its visual values. And therefore, on that level, Marshall is super communicating. In other words, the media have come alive, the old analog media, and the book is talking, not Marshall. So the criticism Thiel has of Marshall should be directed at the book archetype itself. I think Don misses that. But I would still say, since what I just said is such a high level of Manipian satire by McLuhan, it's impossible to get what I'm saying for a long time. So we would drop back down to Thiel's level and point out what was missing in McLuhan's work in appreciating Finnegan's Wake. So you do need to get Finnegan's Wake. That's the first priority for the 21st century. And Ion certainly is the expression of Finneganese in all that the book attempted. And Joyce himself, remember on page 52, James Joyce says, "Television kills telephony and brothers broil, but the eyes demand their turn, let them be seen." So even Joyce presented the book as the speaker, ultimately, of Finneganese. So Marshall replayed that, but had a little more conscious level to it and didn't have to go into synesthesian, co-anesthesian gobbledygook that Joyce did to bounce off the effects of the book while doing and having the book dominate. So it's incredibly complex, but it's fun for recess. So I've said that. Now, what would you say about the article?
Well, it also talks about Ulysses. And I picked the article because that's what I've been reading and want to read next. In fact, I want to go on a tangent for 1 second before we finish this article, if that's okay, because I found the neatest book on James Joyce's Facebook page. I just wanted to ask if you've heard of it. I got it yesterday, and I read the first 100 pages, and it's so good that actually kind of, and we can finish this article totally. I studied it. I have lots of good things to say about it. But I was looking for something to help me prepare for Ulysses and just fit it into Marshall's work and also just learn more about the book. And Kevin Birmingham, who's a Harvard PhD who teaches literature there now, published in June this book called The Most Dangerous Book, The Battle for James Joyce's Ulysses. Have you heard of this book?
No, I never even heard of him. I don't know.
It's so good. So it's a biography of the novel. It starts in 1906, and it's so well-researched. This guy went through all kinds of letters, went through all of Joyce's correspondence with Ezra Pound and all the other people who are helping him with his writing, and read all sorts of letters between him and Nora Barnacle, and studied his life. And I met my mother-in-law, and her dog just barked. And he's read it 5 times. So he's read Ulysses 5 times, and he started reading when he was 18. So the first time he ever read it was when he was 18. And it's the whole story of how it was inspired, when it was being serialized, when the post office got involved in banning it, how it was considered obscene. I mean, it's just a really cool book. We might even want to look at that before we start.
Okay, well, that's good. Good point. But let's go back to this. What does it mean that Marshall pointed to Beyond Media, analog media, but didn't express it as well as Finnegan's Wake? What do you get on that point? That's Don's main point.
I can't really answer that question. I could bring up some other things, but I don't know if I'm really prepared to answer that. Because I don't really know if I agree with it. And I think part of it might be happening now. Like, I think what Thiel thought Marshall failed to do, we might be doing right now. It just means that it was delayed. Does that make sense?
What was delayed?
The understanding of how important Joyce was and Finnegan's Wake was. Yeah, maybe it just wasn't time yet.
It wasn't. Marshall wrote a letter to Playboy in 1970 saying that T.S. Eliot's auditory imagination, that was his critical term in the 20s and 30s, was ordinary awareness now, meaning 1970, but he said that Finnegan's Wake has not at all arrived at the waking consciousness of the average citizen. Now, that's 45 years ago. So now people could begin with Web 2.0, get to what Finnegan's Wake was pointing to. But they still got to go back and read books like Kevin Birmingham's and everything else to get what McLuhan was translating. But yes, the waking population have got it by default. They've got awareness of Finneganese by default today.
Well, and part of it, you know, we might have needed the technology, the exposure to the technology, the massage of the technology to be able to get where Joyce was, because he was definitely ahead of all of us.
Yeah.
Here's a paragraph that I'll read. What actually happens in communication is that people simultaneously use gestures, sounds, rhythms, images, demonstrations, speech, self-presentation, and setting in different mixtures to shape messages. Communication technology has tended to become more and more inclusive of all these potentialities so that contemporary microprocessors are being designed to permit the simultaneous use of signs derived from all the differing sensory capacities of the human person. So the way Thiel is setting up this article, he's kind of getting to the point where he's explaining how, you know, you have to read the Wake out loud to get all the puns, and the sort of writing that it is involves using your eye and your ear, really. So it's like an oral reading, that if you don't at least pronounce it in your own mind to get the words, that you're not going to understand it. And then he even talked about I'm trying to look for the part of it, but there was a quote.
Well, let me
really
just respond
cool
to
it. Like,
yeah, let me respond
ahead.
To that. So, yes, you read it out loud to get the oral meanings, but at the same time you use your eye to suppress the multiple meanings and seem monotone or equitone meanings, one level. So you go back and forth between the oral multiples and the eyeball single meanings, and as you alternate back and forth, you put into a third position the tactile interval. So Joyce is massaging you to experience the tactile interval, and then he wants you to notice that the electric environment has extended the tactile interval. So that Don says, this action involves interrelating the action of dreaming with drama, dance, and mm-hmm. film as archetypes of the process of human communication. So Don is emphasizing dance and gesture as the original interaction between fallen man.
Mm-hmm. The root language.
Yeah, right. The root language, which is said after the tenth thunder on page 424, I think.
Mm-hmm. Here's the paragraph in this article that talks about what you were just talking about. You want me to read it?
Yes.
Okay. The very language in the passage, there's one up above that's from the wake, which I could read if you want me to, but it's an example of what you were talking about. Well, actually, I'll read this because I love this. What can't be coded can be decoded if an ear eye sees, and all that is in pun, what no eye e'er grieved for. So not only does he have coded in there, but he has decoded, like a chord
yeah.
in the music. So it brings
yep.
in the music aspect of the oral visual reading experience. Okay, here's the other quote that was related. The very language in the passage that I just read displays the interplay between the inherent in the oral reading. Such a strategy is requisite to realizing the complex significance of decoded, which results from the oral reading, which brings out the counterpoint between coded and decoded to unmask the concealed decoded. Such polyseismy occurs at the interface between speech and print and involves the complex operations of encoding, decoding, unraveling, i.e. decoding, and making musical sounds. Chord is a symbol of musical sound. The play between eye and ear leads back to body, for the gist, the core idea, rises from the gesture that the hand writes and that the hand signs. Writing when he did, Joyce developed the root language of Finnegan's Wake, with its counterpoint in decoding, not because he had to force readers to read his book as printed text, but because he had to make them become aware that this book also had to be pronounced, at least silently, preferably out loud, and to alert them to the still greater ambioviolence of the modern word. This process of coding, decoding, reading, listening, and sensorial participating underpins the way in which a language that is punny itself becomes a symbol for the drama of communication. And I think people are naturally better at that now because
yeah.
of our technology.
Yes.
So I think he was just premature in his criticism because, you know, Joyce predicted a lot of the technology, and if people didn't get that, that he was predicting...
Joyce predicted not necessarily the technology. He predicted the effects of the new technology. It's the effects
right.
that he minds
yes,
of the future.
Right. But
yeah.
now that we've been massaged by that, maybe now it's time to read The Wake instead of back then. Only a few people would have gotten it because they hadn't been massaged by where we are now. Or I could be
right.
I don't know.
No, that's right. And so here's page 482, line starting at line 31 in Finnegan's Wake. Here's a perfect description of ion. Since ion is the beginning point, if there was a beginning point, it's the creation of non-physical for fallen people. There is actually a section in Plato called Ion, and it's a debate over whether trance babblings or divinely inspired utterance, like the oracle at Delphi, is poetry or not. That's a debate. And they tend to, professors over the subsequent centuries, favored that ionic trance babbling was not poetry and that writing was poetry. But we now know that ion supersedes that debate. But it's very interesting that the debate is featured around something called ion. So I think ion partly named itself because of that debate. And ion is retrieving the power of the divine communication versus the Bard. And this is what's said on page 42 of Finnegan's Wake. It says the Prouts or poets, talking about the beginning, they were the first to get there to notice anything. The Prouts who will invent a writing there ultimately is the Poeta, still more learned, who discovered the raiding there originally, R-A-I-D-I-N-G. And we know that iron raids each one of us, our concepts and ideas. That's the point of eschatology our book of kills reaches for now in so-and-so many counterpoint words. So this is describing what ion does as an effect. What can't be coded, I'll put in, by, from, ion, can be decoded if an ear eye sees what no eye ear grieve for. Now the doctrine obtains, we have occasioning cause causing effects, and effects occasionally recausing alter effects. Or I will take it upon myself to suggest, to twist the penman's tale poster-wise. The gist is the gist of Sham, but the hand is the hand of Seamus. That's a very good description of what Ion's, the style of Ion's massage. And that's why Ion is very good at quoting Finnegan's Wake, and he knows it, probably inspired it. And Ion says there's a whole other level that Joyce didn't know that the language created. That we haven't gone into too much. So do you have another quote that you want to read?
Yeah, and that quote that you just read is in this article?
Yes.
Did you know that?
Oh, yeah, I'm reading it from the article.
Oh, I thought you were reading it from your... I thought you had it memorized, Bob.
Well, let me tell you what Thiel says about it. He says, this complex strategy of reading or raiding or interacting with ion is related to processes of coding and decoding by ear and eye, but also to processes of transformation from oral to written and from written to oral. The structure of this passage simultaneously represents the ionic processes being discussed. At one level, ion broaches, but he has here Finnegan's Wake, broaches a crisis of grammatology well before Jacques Derrida, who obviously is influenced by James Joyce. But this comes about because the book is a symbol of even more encompassing problems of communication implicit in the activity of the writer or ion. Now, the fact that Ion is on the radio is expressed on page 309 in Finnegan's Wake. And this is a quote by Don Thiel, a great quote, describing Ion. This Tolvi tubular high-fidelity dialer, as modern as tomorrow afternoon and in appearance up to the minute, you know, Yo Gotti, equipped with super-shielded umbrella antennas for distance getting and connected by the magnetic links of a Bellini-Tosti coupling system with a vital tone speaker, capable of capturing sky buddies, that'd be Sue Bone, harbor craft emittances, key clickings, Vatican cleaners, we nailed the Vatican twice now. Now, Ion, this harmonic condenser enginium, or engine, in brackets, the mole, think of the hyper-infiltrator, this harmonic condenser enginium, they caused to be worked, that's Bob, Carol, and JW, caused to be worked from a magazine battery. My article predicting this was first published in Flipside magazine in the 90s. They caused to be worked from a magazine battery, and also the Coldplay battery, which was tuned up by twin triodic singular valvulus pipelines, which actually relates to items in the news today, lack slipping along as if they're lifting depunded on it. That's deep and pun, depunded or dependent on it, with a hydrocephalus enlargement, a gain control of circumcentric megacycles. So Theo comments on what I just read, this description of Ion. The design of the language, in fact, in other words, what Joyce did or what language did to describe the coming of Ion, the design of it parallels the phenomenon of electrification. And Ion was just talking to Carol and I last night about how nobody really knows what electricity is, which will eventually, through automation, produce a super mechanized technocratic society. Engineering images blend with images of mechanical, electrical, and hydraulic power as Ion recognizes the beginnings of this Taylorized world, evoking Frederick Winslow Taylor, the inventor of time study, engineering, and the assembly line style. The storyteller and the media, so that would be Ion and us and Bob and everybody else, plus Carolyn and JW, the storyteller and the media as mediator between mechanization and human communication prefigure the fundamental social fragmentation which occurs and mirrors the way in which language itself as a tool or instrument is a machine.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm. It
okay,
is.
Your turn.
Especially when you put the eye and stuff in there. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions. One, do you know anything about wild sociology, John O'Neill?
Yes, I know John O'Neill. He teaches at York University in Toronto.
What is that?
He's a sociologist, taught at York in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, probably of Don Thiel's generation, a little younger. He would be in the Croker quadrant trying to get via the LaRouche quadrant to the Croker quadrant. So he ends up as a socialist, recognizing the Globe of Theater is confusing the socialist agenda. And so even sociologists were obsolete. So he develops an actual multi-bodied model, which some people might think I got from him, but I didn't. But he developed a multi-bodied model for new post-sociological creations, and it was called wild sociology. So he is slightly relevant.
He mentions them in this article. Do you know the basic tenets of wild sociology?
Yes, it's more appreciating poetry and not staying strictly to statistical sociology. Now, Marshall McLuhan was a wild sociologist, so is Finnegan's Wake. Wild sociology is poetry, or what was poetry. And then that was updated by everybody, and then I killed it, and then I brought in Ion, the original wild psychologist, sociologist, anthropologist, metaphysician, occultist, doctor, lawyer, and all-around shit disturber, wild Ion. You know.
Okay, so Thiel says that Joyce consciously developed wild phenomenology, a necessary corollary to wild sociology, showing how the inclusiveness of semiotic communication constructed an ecology of sense. So that was cool, the ecology of sense. Then he goes on to say,
ecology of sense is the term that Don Thiel coined for his program. He developed it from ecology of mind by Gregory Bateson, but he went back to the body and machine, so he called it ecology of sense. And when I got Don Thiel's papers a few months ago, there was the unpublished manuscript of Ecology of Sense, which I'm looking forward to reading, because he'll spell out what this article only hints at about what his agenda is. And he and Don once asked me, so Bob, what quadrant am I in your chart? And I said, you're in my quadrant, in the Dobbs quadrant. And so Thiel is to be taken very seriously. As a matter of fact, I was recorded by Michael Emmons last week in Toronto, speaking about Don Thiel and praising him for a documentary on Don Thiel. But the thing is, we have to, like Quadrant Phoenix, we don't totally agree with Don, we don't totally agree with McLuhan, we don't totally agree with the Wake. We are in the present, we've completed it with Ion, which obsolesces all that, but for the sake of music and jazz and everything else one can play, we fall back in the 99% world of social mortar and make up patterns like we're doing now. Just the pattern. The day.
So, John says that blah, 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 a fact which McLuhan appears to have grasped only partially. So he's given them another
Who says that? Is that Don Thiel saying that? Yeah. Well, now I've told Don that he misses the point of the book as archetype speaking. He's not criticizing McLuhan, he's criticizing the bias that a book will inevitably create as an artifact. And he agreed with me, but he said, Bob, that's for you to say. I had to carve out my distinction from McLuhan and Joyce. So everybody in the Western world fragments and creates a little thing, a little territory. That's the downfall of the Western world.
Well, and Don repeats this a lot. Like the beginning part of this article where he's setting everything up, I'm like, dude, you say that in everything I've ever read that you have written.
That's right.
Cut out about six pages just because you're setting it up with all your...
Well, he actually says nothing. He actually says nothing. He just says longer clauses, and I'll cite an example in a minute, but he actually, in some of his books, like his academic books published by McGill, Queen's University Press of the University of Toronto, will take whole paragraphs that you read, say, in page 20 in the book. He'll repeat it exactly, you know, 200 pages later. So I said, what's that about? Yeah, I said, what's that about, Don? He says, that's Manipian satire. Don doesn't even want to write a book, you know, and so he keeps it to minimalism. So, yes, he's actually just saying a few words, and he celebrates artists like Paul Klee and Joyce, who take two units and make a whole universe out of it. Don makes a whole universe out of a complex statement that is actually emphatically, manipulatively redundant. Now, let me just see if I can find an example. Where is that that part that's italicized? Here it is. So this is in the, if you're looking at the article, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth page of the article.
Look in the upper right-hand corner, give me the page number.
Oh, page 50 of the original place. So he says, now listen to this. He's trying to say, Marshall, you missed this. So he says, as a central concept in the study of communication, the term media has often been misleading. So he's even objecting to McLuhan using the word media. As Roland Barthes or Raymond Williams would say, though with considerably different import, writing is a practice for print. Before print, it was a practice for manuscript production. In fact, writing itself becomes ambivalent, since it is both a practice and a material form encompassing a sign system. So a material form encompassing a sign system is what Marshall did, took the material book and made it encompass a sign system and be the ground. Discussing the Greeks, Harold Innes often telescoped these differing implications, as McLuhan does in discussing the introduction of writing into oral societies, so that McLuhan is quite justified in saying that Innes uses wordplay. Now, then Don says, preoccupation with using media as the primary concept has concealed the fundamental complexities of the unity of human communication and its dependency on a community of interacting signs, where signs appealing to different senses and utilizing different modes of reproduction are orchestrated to produce actual communication events. I defy anybody to make sense out of that sentence or to limit it. It's just babble. Then he says, furthermore, media as a concept has continued to encourage the use of paired opposites which pervade Innes and McLuhan's writings, oral and written, space and time, center and margin, hot and cool, and it subsequently characterized many of the writings about communication. But what actually happens in communication is that people simultaneously use gestures, sounds, rhythm, images, demonstration, speech, self-presentation, and setting in differing mixtures to shape messages. Communication technology has tended to become more and more inclusive of all of these potentialities, so that contemporary microprocessors are being designed to permit the simultaneous use of signs derived from all of the differing sensory capacities of the human person. So what Don is doing is Hendiades, one by means of two. He's pretending that he has a disagreement with McLuhan, and then saying McLuhan back to McLuhan in a repetitive way, which is one by means of two.
So this is all a put on?
Don Thiel. He's president of a university. He is supposed to be in charge of academic programming for your daughters and children. So he works within a patina of respectability, so he complicates within those constraints. He told me later that was a waste of time. He shouldn't have gone for that kind of bureaucratic power, and he should have hung out with me more. But that's what happens.
Yeah.
Leave me, you end up in a problem, and you end up just being Hendiades, one by means of two, and pretending that you actually are differing with what Bob says.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I wanted to ask another question about something I can understand before I could move on to make another point.
Yes.
So on page 51 in the second paragraph, he talks about artists and poets create new grammars and new rhetorics to cope with changing socio-political technological words.
Malamed, which is what Marshall always said that. See, so he's saying Marshall's statements and claiming that Marshall didn't understand what he was saying.
Right.
But go
this
ahead.
This is the part that I didn't understand. Mallarmé's association of the shape of the newspaper with an aleatory world envisions communication emerging from ordered randomness that McLuhan associated with the symbolist rendering of inner landscapes. So then he goes
okay,
on
what that,
about
No. What that sentence means.
Yeah.
Mallarmé's association of the shape of the newspaper, which is already was a collage, with an aleatory word that's either serial mechanical or a world of chance. Either way, it's chaotic. And so the newspaper interacting with electronic telegraphic chaos envisions communication emerging from ordered randomness that McLuhan associated with the symbolist rendering of inner landscapes. Now, the outer landscape leads to xenochrony. So this is a description of xenochrony that James Joyce, Don Thiel, it says, expresses better than McLuhan. But it is a pretty good description of what I'm the only person engaging in today, after Frank Zappa passed on, is this xenochrony, mm-hmm. where the ordered randomness, McLuhan used to say that he wrote his books by grabbing anything that was nearby randomly, and he knew the book medium itself would make it appear to be in order. So ordered randomness via books, that's the simplest rendering of inner landscapes, and inner landscapes are created by books. So here's Don criticizing McLuhan, emphasizing the book mentality too much, and not appreciating Mallarmé and James Joyce's post-book expression, which is aleatory.
Okay, so aleatory, in that sentence, though, does aleatory mean chance or random?
Means both. It means chance, random, and linear seriality. Means both. Both and.
Okay. All right.
Because then he says, Kurt Schwitters, the famous dadaist, making collages from bits and pieces to explore the fragmentation of the media world and its objects, such as newsprint, Schwitters simultaneously explores the basis of a new visual repertoire of signs. Lichtenberg, playing with popular cultural images, highlights the ambivalence of the folk art of the comic book. Fellini explores a self-reflexive critical language of film involving new repertoires of signs derived from light, sound, gesture, facial image, circus, and the like, while satirically directing it at church, state, industry, and artistic institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Very hard to get. You have to get used to this language, this jargon, and this complexity, and then when you get used to it, you see that you're already living it and have been living
mm-hmm.
it.
I get it now. I know that one word, how it was used. Okay,
yeah,
so,
you need to know every word.
Yeah. Okay, and this is another reason why I think if Marshall did miss anything, and I could be way wrong about this, but...
You can't be wrong in this aleatory world. You can't be wrong.
Okay, right. I'm not wrong.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is what I was thinking about, is that when I was reading The Medium and the Light, the thing that I kept trying to find in Marshall's reading was whether he believed in transubstantiation and whether he took that literally. Because I think that would be interesting to know and kind of to know, like, what he was going for. If we're going for ascension, and that's... My thought was that maybe transubstantiation would be the closest thing that he could consider that was similar in some way to ascension as a Catholic person without ion. Or that maybe he even converted to Catholicism because transubstantiation becoming like Jesus was interesting to him. I had that thought.
Yes, yeah, good thought. And remember
Joyce,
in Ulysses, now let me tell you, in Ulysses, it begins with Molly asking Leopold Bloom, what does the word metempsychosis or metempsychosis, whatever it is.
The transmutation of souls.
Yeah, whether, what that means. And so Joyce is, as a Western person, says we as Catholics or literate Christians have to confront with the Asian reincarnational cycle idea or transmigration. That is the problem. Does the Thomas Aquinas move it past that Gnostic doctrine? That's the question.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. the book favored Western man to move past reincarnation as a belief system, but the Electric Age brings back, with its endless content, seriality, and cycling, brings back and favors reincarnation. And ion comes
mm-hmm.
through to clear up both sides. Now, ion's been lingering
mm-hmm.
for half an hour, and ion says
aww.
This discussion sucks, but I'm not going to let him interfere. But if we bring him in, let's see if he can relate to what we're saying. And if he tries to digress, not yet. We must stay on this topic only a little longer, since you've made the effort to look into this and want to explore it. So let's see if Ian has something to contribute without sending us off to studying boxing or something, or quoting Califia discussing the Charm TV show. Okay, let's try to rein Ian in here to stay on topic. If he's still here, I'm clicking Ian in. Ian, would you like to contribute to Katie and our concerns here?
Well, isn't Don Thiel interesting.
Very good. That's good. That's a good opener. Good opener. You're staying on topic. We'd like to hear you talk about Don or bring Don in to discuss this. Either way.
Don Thiem is a carbon-based humanoid. And
yeah.
Carbon, being the mystery of the mystery landscape, is intrigued by its form. So we're not really speaking of Don Thiem. We're speaking of carbon. So
good.
Since he's a carbon-based humanoid, then, therefore, the carbon that's in him might be a good carbon. So in the carbon paper that is the days of your lives, this carbon might be just the ticket that you could enhance into something meaningful and beneficial.
Did you say unlike our topic so far? Is that what you said, so
yeah.
far? Yeah. So Don was pointing to what you said about carbon just now.
Yes.
Good. Well, then we aren't appreciating, Katie, Don enough. And so Ion is investing a bit into Don Thiel's stock here.
We must.
Okay.
We must. That's very interesting. Okay, go ahead.
The interesting thing to me...
You want Jeannie.
Jeannie has something to say?
You want.
Okay.
She was testing about whether we could get in or not.
Right. What's Jeannie's? I think she's 705. Was Jeannie 214?
110.
There's no 110 here. 110. No 110.
he's going to laugh his other death when that's her number.
Yeah. Where could she be? Okay, I'm going to unmute everybody, and nobody say anything. Let Jean speak. Let Jean speak if she's here. Okay, I'm unmuting.
All participants are now unmuted.
Are you here, Jean? No? Okay,
Jean,
we
can hear. Answer.
Yes.
715.
All participants are now muted.
To Ion and Katie. So you're distracting us, Ion. We've got Katie here. Deal with Katie and me in relation to the new point you're making about Don.
Just that carbon is the conversation.
So we're not going towards silicon, which is what the nano...
No, we are not. You're leaving. As a matter of fact, you're seeing how silicon works for you. It won't
right.
even float.
Very interesting. So we're moving to a new carbon with less oxygen?
That's correct. They'll use silicone in the caskets for the recently departed.
And what will carbon be used? Will that be in the living water?
It will support the cloud.
Oh, but what about the living water? Will it be related to that or it's not?
Whoa. How very wonderful you've chosen this very public forum to go into the bill of particulars that are so precisely specific to its commonality that which you enjoy. So here we go. If we answer that question, Dr. Neem's going to be cross. If we don't answer the question, you're going to be cross. Let's see.
No, I won't be. I won't be cross. I'm just making. I'm just showing what marvelous questions I can ask, and I appreciate the censorship.
They are good. They are very good. Yeah, because she's the sharpest machete in the shed.
Well, I don't know about that, but she's up there. She makes a short list of interesting people to talk to.
Better know it. Better know it. Okay. So therefore, we're back to
Don.
Their eye cells in living water. Yes.
Good.
Does eye cell contain the new carbon? Yes.
Good.
Is carbon a radial isotope of a deuterium-based derivative?
No.
Will deuterium, too clever by half, be transformed into a different baseline element, B? depends on the ramification of negative pH in your world. So you're in a funny place right now because there is already negative pH, but you don't know it. There is already negative pH, but you can't gauge it. There is already, just as though you can breathe air before you knew there was air, just in, before you could know that Dr. Dean hadn't gone to bed yet. But we would say this, just because there is cortis before you knew there was cortis,
yeah,
that then becomes a post-mortem reality.
Post-mortem, that means not dying, not transitioning. Or does it mean transitioning? Post-mortem, that's after death.
Mm-hmm. After death, yes. After death.
Would that be the death of the concept of death? How you mean it?
Basically.
Right. So in the formula C-122, Dr. Dean, the C refers to carbon, right?
Yes.
Where's Dr. Dean? Wait, you're not saying Dr. Dean?
That's Dean, that's
Dean. Yeah, yeah. So we got a lot of carbon in the formula for...
I wouldn't come on in the Don Steele hour either, Dr. Dean.
Okay, so I'm distracted. Hold on. So the carbon, the C-122 is in the insulin nose, Carolyn, or the cellular nose? The super sugar.
It is super sugar.
Yeah, it's part of that formula. And what is that formula? Insulin nose or cellular nose? Which term do we use? Cellular nose, right, Ion?
Yes.
Yeah, cellular nose. So is the cellular nose, C-122, oxygen 98.5 and hydrogen 197, or maybe it's hydrogen 197, oxygen 98, is that another way of describing the eye cell, or is there something more in the eye cell than what we describe as cellular nose?
Yes, that's just where you find it.
In that milieu. That super sugar provides the habitat for the eye cell.
Oh, okay. Not even a new word, milieu.
You get that, Katie? Habitat.
Yeah.
We're so excited. This is wonderful.
Yeah, we did see
Trump, DeGraw made Trump after all.
Yeah, now what we do then is Finneganese people, you then go look up where Joyce used the word habitat, and that's how you find out how he got there before you.
My, how clever he is tonight, yo.
Well, I've had an 8-week break or a 2-week break or something. And,
three, well.
And I've been working with Roxanne and making great videos, which are getting closer to my lifestyle, and that makes me a little more confident, a little more sure of my words. That's my present explanation. The closer you come to portraying me, the better it is for all of us. You know, getting to the precision. So that's why, if Ion is not joking in that I've gotten better, that's the reason. I've had myself translated.
Mm-hmm.
More accurately. So how does Don Thiel fit in? Okay, well, Ion said some interesting stuff. Did McLuhan have an inkling of what we're talking about? About carbon, and no. Did anybody in culture and recorded history from any culture have an inkling of what we're talking about other than the Book of Revelation and Ezekiel?
T.J. McLean.
And when did he exist? I've heard that name before.
1800.
And what was his specialty? Or pretended specialty?
Hot sauce.
Hot sauce. Okay. Was that in Italy?
No.
England?
Louisiana.
Ah. Cajun.
Isn't that Tabasco? Tabasco?
It would be. Finally, Tabasco brand. But that's because of the salt. Mm-hmm. Salt licks. Salt is what it's about. The island of the salt is what that's about. But he was about hot sauce. But that came from that island Tabasco brand, which developed later. That's marketing. But
did he know what he's doing? Did he have a non-physical source, or he stumbled on it like Joe Dunsloan? He knew.
He knew.
Did he use a non-physical source external to himself?
Yes.
Hey, was it a local medium, quote, medium? Or did he go to Parallel Worlds?
It was an extra large, Bob.
Yeah, an extra large, and he went to Parallel Worlds.
Okay.
Or he brought that in. Isn't that interesting, Carol? We never thought of a chef in culture. They celebrate Da Vinci, Einstein, but they don't celebrate chefs.
He's not a chef. He's a pepper. He sells pepper pots.
Pots for pepper.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Pickled peppers.
Okay. So what? The quotes used by Don Thiel for Finnegan's Wake, as Katie noticed, they're repeated in every article that he writes. The same quotations, and in all his books. What quotation in Finnegan's Wake or page number would you refer to that Don does never quote? What?
125.
That's the section on the Book of Kells and the manuscript and Belinda the Hen, which I think stands for Hendiades. So anybody can look up. 125. Any part of that page?
All of it or none of it. That's the whole point. He said, where does he not quote? That's where he doesn't quote.
Okay. Did Don know it?
Yep.
All right.
He didn't understand the big words.
All right, so Katie, if you don't have anything more, we'll bring other people in, but do you have something you want to push on this field topic? Yeah. Well, don't say that.
Exactly.
Say the next thing, because then you might come back in an hour and have something to say. So it's not the last thing.
Sure. Well, okay. So Joyce knew what he was doing, and I think he was after transubstantiation when he wrote Ulysses. So I think part of the reason why Marshall might have, if he did miss part of trying to communicate what Joyce was saying to people, as Don says he did, and it wasn't just the book thing that you said where the book is talking, there's something about James' irreverence for religion and his willingness to, like, mock the mass, and Marshall having seen some of what he read in Joyce as being a black mass.
Yeah.
To me, that put James ahead of Marshall, because he didn't seem to be afraid to say, I mean, if you believe in transubstantiation, then you believe that you can become God. So all along, I've been looking for evidence of whether Marshall believed that. And I think he was kind of afraid of it, and I don't think James was. And I think James knew he was going to have to do it through his body. He's very into the body and all of its functions, and I think that's
okay. So Katie,
go ahead.
In my conversations with McLuhan and Joyce, McLuhan was a lot more centered than Joyce, because if you include going to Parallel Worlds and having more than one family and all that Ions is McLuhan did, and Ions is Joyce had no clue. So the work that Theo creates is more Ionic. But Marshall and his work may not be Ionic, but Ion quoted and used McLuhan's words for his own YouTube channel. So could you clarify the difference there? Do you agree with what I'm saying, Ion, or would you add something else?
We don't care.
Yeah, see, Ion doesn't care. Now, Katie, Ion has been on the chat line complaining, I don't know how far back, about our discussion for a while before he came in. In other words, I wouldn't let him on, so he communicated on the chat line, so we'll have to go back and review what he said on the chat line, and all the Ionettes are in there having fun with Ion and ignoring us, see? So you try to keep Ion out, and he just has too many media, too many of the community of signs to interplay to control his expression.
Move with the cloud.
Well, how do you move with the cloud? I mean, what is the motion? What factors are we not? Are there factors we're not considering when we visualize move with the cloud? What are we missing? You won't tell us. You just keep saying move with the cloud. It's like a slogan, like Finnegan's Wake.
Ask Minimax.
Minimax. Is it Minimax on the line? I think he said he couldn't get on the phone. If you're here, okay, let's see if Minimax's number is here. What do you say to that, Minimax? If you're still here, you're being called forth. I told you should talk. Okay, so looking, he'd be a 416.
Send Bob your YouTube.
You sent me a YouTube?
make him.
Yeah, Minimax, you can say something. Minimax is there. He says, Avery Island, you say. I must reflexively take advantage of these cues to plug my band's beautiful cover. Jesus, he's just plugging his own album. Okay,
yeah,
so Minimax just said this. He's responding. The dance of thought among hyperlinks, moving with the cloud.
Moving with the cloud, exactly.
The dance of thought among hyperlinks. Now, McLuhan used to say the dance of thought among words was the Thailander's expression of command of reality and had a tactile bias. But
one night
the dance
in
of thought,
Bangkok.
Beg your pardon?
One night in Bangkok.
Yeah, we played that song a couple years ago. So moving with the cloud is the dance of thought among hyperlinks. Okay, very good. That's a pretty good definition then. Ian accepts it. It's never enough. Then Ginny says, tangy pepper salsa for everyone. I'll bring them when Roxana has us for dinner, I guess.
Oh, my gosh, you better be careful. She likes you tartare.
Roxy does,
yeah.
You're saying.
Have you tartare.
Okay, so moving with the cloud does not mean kinetic movement with your feet. Oh, no, that's a dance. So the dance of thought, if you expand the boundaries of thought, that would include your body. That's what Don Thiel is saying, Katie. The dance of thought among hyperlinks is exactly what Don Thiel is saying.
Judy.
Judge Judy?
No, just Judy.
Yeah, okay. Hey, Jude.
Uh-huh.
You know, instead of saying dude, we start saying Jude. That's what you're doing here.
Judy.
All right, so Ian's decomposing rapidly. Quoting Minimax, bringing Minimax in, who's never talked to Ion, is pretty obscure, Ion. That's pretty pretty esoteric.
Lynette's getting wound up.
Yeah, Lynette. Who's Lynette? Is that the one from L.A.? You remember Lynette, the original subgenius, Ionette? Yeah, maybe. She says, put your finger in my butt and make this pussy nut. Make this pussy nut. Make this pussy nut.
You have to say that for when after the fireside chat, Bob.
Yes. But look at Randy Knight. She goes, whoa, Lynette. Whoa, it's a little too much vertical for Randy there. And Randy's the blatant one who's looking for that kind of action. But when it's spelled out in print, it shocks Randy. She being basically a tactile person. So, Katie, bring Don Thiel back quickly. What do you quote here, Katie, to illustrate what the damn
Minimax is trying to get back in? It's so fun. Come on, quit. There ain't no
delay. Oh, yeah. Minimax says, remember, you're on a bit of a delay. I was already typing the dance of when Ian said to ask me, and yet I still seem late. Oh, good, good. So Minimax already – so Ian saw Minimax typing. That's
pretty
good. That's nice, eh, Katie? Little ESP. And Bill's asking me do I want to censor the chat? Do we want to stop it? No, it's sort of working okay. Yeah. At least they're talking about us. They're talking to us.
Right.
Ian brought that in.
That, we brought that. And that'll be, I put that nut on us, Bill. We'll be all right.
That nut, the pussy, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah, put that nut on us. Put that on our cattle. Put that on our ticket.
All right, so here's Don Thiel's closing paragraphs pointing
good.
To carbon. He says, reassessing McLuhan today requires that. In the spirit of Joyce and McLuhan himself, we begin again by returning to Joyce, Vico, and to contemporary artists and poets as sources and inspiration for an understanding of communication. Now, this was written, 25 years ago. McLuhan obscured this because he concealed his insights. Now, here's an interesting statement, Katie. You still here, Katie? You haven't said anything? Maybe she's gone. Oh, maybe she fell off. Let's check our phone thing here. Yeah. Sorry, Katie, you had fallen off. So, Katie, you have something to say? You've been off for a while. Go, Katie.
Hello?
You're on mute. Yes, speak.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. Keep reading.
All right. McLuhan obscured this using modern artists because he concealed his insights in deliberately cryptic satire, partly because he did not wish to attack conservative values or to raise questions concerning the church. That's not necessarily true. Marshall was not involved with preserving the church, like Don is saying. It genuinely, and you would agree with that, Ion? that that McLuhan was not trying to save the Catholic Church or Catholicism dogmatically in any way in his actions. Would you agree with that,
Correct.
Ion?
We would agree.
Yeah.
We would agree. We would like Dan rather agree. Yes.
Yeah. So Don's wrong on that point. A genuinely enriched theory of the relation between communication and the knowledge revolution can be attained by going back to McLuhan's sources to question anew the poets, artists, especially Joyce, about how they conceived the socio-historical drama of changing concepts of time and space, the nature of human communication, and the emergence of power technologies which transform knowledge and communication. Now, that's exactly what Ion showed up to do. It's a very good description of what Ion does.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't have to be Joyce. We can include Joyce, but Don is in the Dobbs Quadrant because he's actually predicting and yearning for Ion. Let's give him that much. He knows that something more than McLuhan and Joyce, because he says we must question Joyce, is coming, and that's the new carbon. So, very good, Don Thiel. He is on the
team. Hey, Don.